Is Taco Bell Express? Is that, I've never seen one. Is that a real thing?
It's like when it's a combination Taco Bell Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
I assume.
I see.
I don't know if I've actually ever been to one.
I've been to one.
But I assume they don't have the full menu.
I've only been to a Taco Bell Express once. There's one on I-5 somewhere between here and Los Angeles that that is a combination Taco Bell and
really long stretch of road.
Dude, I have to drive that whole thing.
Yeah, if you're ever on the way from Portland to Los Angeles, keep an eye out.
You can't miss it.
Yeah.
Taco Bell Express and what's the donuts that's at the airport all the time?
Krispy Kreme?
Not Krispy Kreme.
Cinnabon.
Cinnabon. That's it. Yeah, it's a combination Taco Bell and Cinnabon.
That'll give me some express diarrhea.
Some synergy. Yeah.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. For your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host, overseeing the transition of a Taco Bell Express into a regular Taco Bell, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, receptionist.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
What if we all get together and help each other and hire a new guy, and then we all kill him, but first we take out like a $100,000 life insurance policy? I bet you guys like that idea, don't you?
I don't know what the that was.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC.
Dude, I got two. I ate two whole apples.
We get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, Kelly Erin Hannon.
K-E-H, that's right, baby.
This week we're talking about Erin Hannon, played by Ellie Kemper. Her first episode was Michael Scott Paper Company in season 5, episode 23, pretty late in the show. A Charles Minor hire, no less.
That's true.
Minor.
A holdover from the Charles Minor regime.
Yeah. Yeah. She was only supposed to be in 4 episodes or something like that. And just like Andy Bernard and some other characters, she held on. She's one of our favorites.
Yeah, I think part of the reason we wanted to talk about Erin was in conversations with a friend of the show, a friend of ours, he mentioned that he did not like Erin. He in fact, went so far as to call her the female Kevin for the rest of the show. So,
which would have to, you'd have to not like Kevin then. For
as as good of an incentive as any to talk about a character that we haven't discussed so far on our show. So I think we're going to spend some time talking about Erin's character. She's very unique in that she comes in so late in the show and finishes out the show with such a significant arc. Many of the other characters who come in later don't have the same sort of character resolution or character development sort of paid attention to them.
She really is one of the last characters who shows up who I consider in the main cast.
Yeah, main ensemble.
You know, maybe maybe Gabe, but they kind of come in around the
Gabe
same time.
Gabe comes in and out, though. I mean, he's not really around.
Well, he's Dunder Mifflin on Tuesday, Thursdays, right. And then he's in Florida Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. No better way to overcome his fear of flying. Mm-hmm.
Fold himself into those seats.
Erin Hannon, very sweet, naive.
115-pound moonbeam.
Kind of a rube, as Michael Scott says.
Erin provides a unique sort of function in the show in that in the Michael Scott Paper Company arc, there's a bit of a reset that happens when the Michael Scott Paper Company is bought out, brought back into Dunder Mifflin, right? Pam and Ryan are, or at least Pam, is kept on as a salesperson, and Erin stays on as the receptionist. And what that allows her to do, she has sort of a minor role at the end of season 5 and into season 6. Of course,
she was
her,
a minor hire, too.
That's
minor?
True. Right. but she gets character development as her sort of romance with Andy sort of grows. But really, what she kind of comes on to be is this sort of replacement for Pam as the secretary to Michael, right? The receptionist to Michael.
Yeah.
So they get a ton of mileage out of her being the receptionist function in a way that Pam had kind of outgrown by the time the Michael Scott Paper Company comes arc comes about in season 5.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely reminiscent moments with Aaron, you know, thinking back to Pam season 1, just kind of being this quiet, like, person who is the object of everyone's affection. I mean, you literally have Dwight and Andy competing for her attention. I mean, I guess Michael doesn't take to her quite like he did to Pam.
That's true.
You mean like the sexual comments?
Yes, the weird.
Not good. I mean, he's still, you know, it's still Michael Scott.
Maybe they have sort of this learned. Unique sort of father-daughter kind of dynamic.
They
that
really
plays
do.
Out.
They have a really yeah. special relationship.
They have a really unique
by
relationship.
The end of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Manages
yeah.
to be sweet somehow. I don't know how, but it is.
I mean, should we jump around? You want to talk about Michael and Aaron?
Let's start with season 5, I think. So okay. She comes in the season 5... you know, Michael Scott Paper Company, during that arc. She appears kind of seldomly throughout the rest of season 5. Mm-hmm. I wrote down that her first interaction with Michael is Michael saying hello, Aaron saying hi, and then Michael saying, Michael Scott Paper Company here to see Mr. David Wallace. I believe we are expected. And they both come out of the conference room, and Michael says, well, how the turntables.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But that's the beginning of their relationship. And then in the Casual Friday episode, her relationship with Kelly kind of comes about where she just says to Kelly, you look like J-Lo.
Yeah. Another yeah. Kelly looks like someone who buys all her clothes at the mall or something.
The way that Kelly sort of bullies Aaron throughout the rest of the show yeah. kind of comes up in that in season 5. And then at the end of Casual Friday, Michael fake fires her, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, a perfect sort of reset for the way that he kind of has his relationship with the receptionist. And Alex, I hope you can find this, but there's a noise that Michael makes where... Michael says, what's the receptionist's name? And Pam says, Aaron. And then Pam says, Aaron, Michael wants to see you. And he makes this sort of grunt, moan noise about how he's excited to make a joke. I can't even replicate it, but you should find it and clip it in here.
Okay.
But Aaron doesn't know Michael at all yet going into that first situation. And then at the company picnic episode, Andy tries to stand next to her during volleyball. That's about it.
Sure. Yeah, she's just sort of, and you can tell that they're thinking, we don't really want to make her too major a character because we don't know if she's going to.
There's, of course, also that scene where Dwight and Andy play Country Roads for her.
Yes.
But after season 5, she becomes a much, much bigger part of the ensemble.
And, of course, we can't move on without mentioning that her real name is Kelly. And then that our introduction to her is Kelly hanging out outside of Charles Miner's office waiting for him to call for Kelly.
Yes, Charles, you wanted me.
So they decide that, okay, Charles is like, I'm going to call you Hannon, because that's Aaron's last name. And she's like, oh, for changing last name, changing names, can I be Aaron? It's my middle name. He says,
that's that, you know?
Hey, Aaron, that's a very pretty name.
Kelly says, well, my middle name is Rajanaganda, and I hate it.
Rajanaganda was a boy's name.
It's so funny because later, as her character develops over the next 3 seasons after she arrives, the further her character gets, the less it becomes realistic that Charles would have hired her. Because you're like, Charles Miner, if he hired her, means he interviewed her and decided this is the person. Like, he's way more of a Ronnie hire than a Aaron, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he would want someone like no-nonsense, really experienced. Yes. And instead, it's like, Charles would not have hired Aaron.
I bet, based on the attention that Charles pays to putting Kevin on phones and putting Stanley as his productivity czar, he probably went with a temp agency and picked the first person that
was available. That's probably true.
I'm not entirely confident in Charles Miner's managing abilities, but that's for another episode.
Mm. Mm. Whoa. All right. Well, how do you feel about Aaron's receptionist abilities?
Oh, I think she's great.
Really?
She's doing a knock-up job.
Yeah. Okay. Looking back, watching through some, this sort of get us into season 6, but just a funny thing I noticed, I watched in St. Patrick's Day, Michael walks in and he's like, ooh, green M&Ms, nature's Viagra.
Yeah.
And then I've never noticed this before, because he clears the whole bowl out and just puts them in his pocket. And I'd never noticed that before. He takes all of them and puts them in his pocket. Anyway. And Kelly, in that moment, which is a reaction where we start to see, is like, she doesn't want to say anything. She doesn't want to be like, oh, she kind of just lets it happen, which we start to see her character emerge in season 6. Mm-hmm. And she's so enthusiastic. She's bubbly. She's easily impressed. Anyone can say anything to her. And she's like, wow, that person's amazing.
We do see that. What I wanted to find was, of course, the Aaron that we know and love, who's just totally clueless. I wanted to find where that starts, because when you first meet her, she is a straight character.
She's so neutral, yeah.
Totally. Mm-hmm. But certainly when Dwight and Andy are like trying to impress her and it's kind of working, it kind of starts to creep in. Then it's like, mm-hmm. Who is this girl?
Yeah. Do you like Erin?
I think Erin's great.
Yeah, I think Erin is absolutely hysterical.
I think she's hilarious. I mean, Ellie Kemper, I mean, what is so fantastic? How can you not like Ellie Kemper? She's, I mean, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is such a great show, and she is so amazing in that show. She was in Derek.
That's what I know her from. Yeah, Derek Comedy, this sort of sketch group, made a lot of YouTube videos. Donald Glover
is from there.
That's how I know him.
A lot of people that you only saw in commercials.
Bobby Moynihan
maybe.
In that? No? Or that was before? That was
Bobby Moynihan is in Derek Comedy. He's in, he is. Okay. He does have an appearance in there.
She's in Bridesmaids? Right?
Yeah, she is in Bridesmaids. I think what Erin brings to the show is a sort of earnestness that is sort of missing kind of along the way, especially by the time she replaces Pam. The character of Pam is so, I guess, experienced, or she knows so much of what Michael is and what this office is and what this workplace sort of demands, right?
She's a veteran.
She can anticipate all of what Michael is doing, right? Mm-hmm. And what Erin sort of provides is sort of in a refreshing way, this person who is so earnest and is so willing to believe whatever anyone tells her. I mean, think about, you know, on one hand, yes, Dwight and Andy try to impress her, but there's a scene in the kitchen where Dwight tells her about how this building is haunted. Mm-hmm. Hattie McGonagall, she was a prostitute.
Yeah.
1806, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And she just believes whatever Dwight is going to say. There is an earnestness and an enthusiasm that Erin brings to the show that I think is kind of, none of the other characters really match.
Yeah, how can you not like someone who's so earnest, mm-hmm. I think is...
I had a really similar note, because by the time she comes around, for me it was Dwight who's sort of... aged out of his sort of wide-eyed gullibility with Michael by that point. And it's sort of like, you really need that chemical in the show to kind of make it work. You need someone who's impressed by things Michael does or doesn't know what's going to happen. And in fact, it becomes, over the course of the last few seasons, there's several episodes that are held up by Erin's need to be liked by other members of the office or to still feel like she has to prove herself, you know, like when she puts on a party or something, and she takes it so seriously that a lot of the other characters just have stopped doing that by that time.
I think, too, in a unique way, Erin is almost sort of this voice, in a way that you wouldn't expect, rewatching these episodes, Erin is sort of this voice of corporate or this voice of the company, because so often her lines are, Michael David Wallace is on the phone for you, right?
Right.
When the show gets really ridiculous, there is in a way that you wouldn't expect, Erin is kind of this voice of, right, this is still a workplace. So I'll give you an example. Mm. This is from episode 3 in season 6, The Promotion, where Dwight says, I deserve that promotion, not Jim. Oh, man. Makes me want to put him in a triangle chokehold and force him to the ground and just keep pressing and pressing and then flip him over and then put him in a hammerlock, and he's gasping. He's panting every last breath and the crowd is going crazy and boom, I emerge victorious. Aha! $18,000 at a chance at the title. Ugh. And Erin comes in and says, Dwight, Jim wants you to keep it down.
Yeah.
She's that voice of corporate reason.
Yeah.
The way her loyalty works is so interesting. Even after Michael is quitting, she's still loyal to him, you know, and she just met him, right?
He's like crawling back to come get the stuff, like,
or she's helping him set up his toys and stuff like that. Am I mixing?
She really kind of commits to whatever. In the ultimatum episode in season 7, she's got the box for happy and the box for sad, right? She goes along with whatever he wants to do.
Two bottles of scotch, sad.
I'll give you another example. Mafia episode in season 6 when John Grotti comes in and Michael says, Erin, you're supposed to be the gatekeeper. Do you have any idea how valuable my time is? And Erin says, in your schedule, it just says 9 till noon is creative space. And I thought this could be part of that. Michael says, do you know how creative space works? Okay, I just cancel my afternoon. And Erin says, you don't have anything in the afternoon. It just says free play. Right? So she goes along with whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
You know, think of that as a counterpoint to where Pam has to take notes of everything Michael has to do in season three during pretzel day, when she writes down Bill Cosby impression, like in kind of a sarcastic way. Aaron is so willing to go along with whatever Michael does.
Right. And that's what she's so fun for that reason. And she is loyal to Dwight the same way when he becomes in charge.
Yeah, I think she's just loyal to anyone who appears competent, and like she responds to that really well. And we'll talk about this later, but I think they do a pretty good job of kind of building her character backwards to sort of explain maybe some of the ways of why she is.
Yeah, all they do is give a lot of really strange details about her upbringing and how
What do we know? She's an orphan, or at least
she grew up in a foster home.
She grew up in the foster care system. She has a foster care brother who she's rooming with at
Reed.
One point.
Yeah.
Reed.
That's, talk about cringiest moments on the show. Right? That's pretty weird.
Andy's wearing a kilt and he goes over to her house.
Yeah. And they're like tickling each other's feet, and it's,
they're really impressionable ages.
Like wrestling.
Yeah, impressionable, everybody says. Yeah. But
are you wearing a dress? It's a kilt.
Yeah. Oh, formative. Those are some formative years.
Well, any brother of Aaron is a friend of mine. Yeah. Andrew Bernard, how are you?
Yeah. That guy is definitely taking advantage of her too. When he's like tickling her feet, he like gives Andy a look that is so sinister.
Yeah. We also know she was in a hospital from age 3 to 6.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh yeah. She's
And then again from like 12 to 17, something like that.
She makes that joke about having scoliosis, which is kind of oddly...
it's clear she's had the hardest...
No, but so she makes that joke about scoliosis, and she pretends to like... does that joke. And then later, I think it's in the pool party episode, where Dwight is looking at her back, and he's like, do you have scoliosis? He was like, your spine is really jacked.
I've never caught that.
If this is straightened up, you'd be 6'6". It's something like that. It's something
that's
really,
so
really
funny.
Random like that. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
You could probably make the argument that from what we know about everyone, she probably had the hardest upbringing in any character on the show.
Yeah.
Outside of Michael, but that was probably self-imposed.
100%, and has the most positive outlook on life out of anyone in the office as well.
Extremely optimistic. Mm-hmm. And the few times we do sort of see her wrestling with information she doesn't like or some bad news, I mean, she processes it in a really different way. I mean, the most obvious example on Secretary's Day, when she goes out to lunch with Michael, finds out about Andy, and she just covers herself in her own hair.
I mean, so yeah, one of the only people to really like see Aaron's light is Andy.
He sees it right away.
Yeah, and he...
And Gabe.
Okay, yes, that's true. But maybe not in the same way. But yes, and they kind of have a what seems like it's going to be a pretty good relationship. They're both sort of naive in the same way, and she's impressed by him, he's impressed by her. It looks like things are going really well. But then Secretary Day, Michael takes her out to lunch, even though he doesn't want to, because he thinks she's kind of dumb, kind of a rube, he says. And they go out to lunch, and he spills the beans that Angela and Andy were engaged. They haven't been dating that long at this point. Am I right?
No, not really. No.
So her reaction is negative, of course, but she freaks out. She pulls her hair over her face and says that in the foster home, her hair was her room. And then, of course, in the meeting,
Michael says, looks around and says, everyone is looking at you. I'll have what she's having. Yeah.
Trying to salvage the moment.
At Hayworth's. Erin has showed herself to be so strange through this entire thing. Andy convinces Michael to ask her to go to lunch.
Yes.
Aaron takes a picture of him while he is asking her to go to lunch. And she says, I was thinking Hayworth's, right, to be a special place, right?
Yeah.
And through the whole experience, she says,
do you have a favorite age?
Yeah, do you have a favorite age?
Yeah.
Or a favorite
month?
Yeah, right.
All sorts of, how many pillows do you sleep with?
Mine was May when I was 7, yeah.
Yeah, April.
What year would you have wanted to have been born?
Yes.
1492, because America was discovered.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
She gives,
or no? What decade? What decade would you want to be a teenager? She says 1490s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and she says April is her favorite month.
I love as a little throwaway line.
She's trying to relate to somebody powerful.
As a little throwaway line where Michael says to the waiter, yeah, I asked for pickles on my burger, and they're only like 5 or 6. Can I get some more pickles?
Yes, sir. I will bring you a bowl of pickles.
But Aaron is like so consistently funny in terms of like laughs per line, if that's a metric
LPL.
We could use.
Yeah.
LPL, she's got to be way up there because, I mean, she delivers so many good little punchlines. She and just like there's just so much affection, and she's just so likable.
Well,
and
she's got this like wide-eyed energy that's constant, that is like,
yeah,
like you can always see it on her face where she's like, am I saying the right thing? I think this is what you're supposed to say. Like, this is what adults say.
And she, you know? She truly believes that Pam is the living legend.
Totally.
Yeah, but she's trying to.
Totally.
She's living in the shadow of Pam, right? In Scott's Tots, she has, like, Pam look over Michael's itinerary.
Yeah.
Pam is like, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
She just crumbles under the pressure of overseeing the pen shipment.
Right.
Pam's
season
like,
9.
Yeah.
Take care
of that. Yeah. And she just absolutely.
You left me
it.
In charge of the pens, Pam. That's what happened. The pens happened.
Don't want to be busybody. Don't want to be lazy bones. Busybody, lazy bones.
She is such a breath of fresh air on the show, and it's so the timing's so great. You know, like you were saying earlier, a bit, like come through season 6, 7, 8, where she's really in her peak. Like, you just really need someone who's fresh to the whole office,
yeah,
and is wide eyed about everybody,
yeah.
And you need that so desperately by the time the show is aged that much.
I can't think of another character who's like just so excited to be a part of it. Like
Kevin,
that's literally everyone else.
There is
Kevin is close.
Think of the I think it's the beginning of season 8 where she's like, planking is a thing where you either get it or you
don't.
And I don't.
But I'm so excited to be a part of it.
Yeah.
That's what she said. Yeah.
There's also a moment in the Florida arc where I think she's on the phone with Jim where she says, we're all wearing name tags, and Ryan started wearing his name tag on his pants. Where now, if you do it, you're
a copycat,
and then if you don't, you're a total dip. And she's like, but I think I found a way. She's got it on her shirt and on her pants.
She's fantastic as the hipster and the saber launch.
My name's Wait. Tabitha.
Yeah,
I just saw Zooey the channel at the Cotrarella Music Festival.
Amazing.
I do love the way that she gives Andy sort of a humanizing quality in their relationship.
Mm. Yeah.
And I love that there's a will they won't they where both characters are so clueless.
Oh my God.
Where both characters are truly interested in each other, but neither one kind of picks up on the signals the other one is dropping or is willing to be clear enough to kind of
neither of them have the balls or wherewithal to even
they literally have that they literally have that time after Secret Santa. Andy gets her all the birds.
12 days of Christmas.
The 12 days of Christmas, which is mostly birds, and gets the drum line for her at the end of the episode, which is a really nice moment. But the episode directly after that, they don't know which one of them is supposed to make a move now. And it
ball's totally in her court.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that just sort of happens like back and forth. And I guess, you know, let's get into, you know,
let's
Aaron's
get into
relationships.
It.
But
yeah,
it's funny when we talk about Secretary's Day, that moment when Michael spills the beans. And I don't know about you guys. I do believe Andy that he says, I was going to tell her. I just was waiting for the right.
Well, that
time.
Was the point that
well,
I was going
to
make later.
I wanted the stars to align. There's a skylight above my bedroom, and I'd like the moon to be in view.
Well, whether or not we believe that Andy was going to tell her soon, I think is besides the point. They haven't been dating that long, and it wasn't Michael's place to tell her that. And how weird to hear that. I mean, that I don't think that Aaron's in the wrong. I mean, it's a bit extreme, but I don't throwing cake or ice cream or whatever it is that she throws at him.
Would have loved to hear that song. Speaking of things we don't get to hear or see.
Yeah, that's true.
Secretary of my heart. Is
a
that
one, a two,
is that what it's called?
A one, two, and then he gets hit with the cake.
Yeah, or Secretary of Love.
Mm-hmm.
Duh.
Yeah.
I wonder if that hadn't happened. You know, would things have? If the beans hadn't been spilled, would things have worked out differently between them? Because if they had a clean runway for a while to like build their relationship, all this stuff that happens later, which is them not knowing how to communicate or them going back and forth and then Andy just being awful. Like,
yeah.
You know? I don't know. It feels like it slipped away.
It's after that Andy, that she kind of tries to get back together with Andy and he kind of backs off that second time, right? Is that?
Well, yes. At the end of season. So they get together, they break up. Aaron is dating Gabe throughout season 7. Mm-hmm. And then in season 8, Andy is dating Jessica. Mm-hmm. And Aaron is struggling to kind of deal with that. You mm-hmm. know, at the end of season 7, she tries to ask Andy out again with the puppet show. Remember that?
Yep. Right.
Yeah. So there's a really funny self-aware line from Aaron. I think it's at the pool party episode. But Aaron says, "You date a guy, you find out he was engaged to your coworker, so you throw cake at him. It's over. You start liking him again, so you ask him out with a puppet show. He says no. Then he follows you home to make sure that you don't kiss somebody. Then he ignores you at a pool party. Am I right, ladies?"
That she is so titillated by the fact that Andy followed her home. Mm-hmm. She loves it. She's just like, what a weird stalker.
I mean,
Andy.
She right. was particularly begging for his attention in that episode.
Meredith puts it in the most vulgar terms. Right?
Yeah, oh, God.
To give it to me.
Yeah. She was like, yeah, you wanted to make sure
California didn't put it in you.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And she goes, yeah. You're like, thing. That's of any two people in the show who I just never, I wanted to always keep them separate. It was Robert California and Aaron. It was just yin and yang. Keep them away. I don't let him anywhere near Aaron. Maybe
you remember the fan fiction I found about night goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even like thinking about it. Don't like it. Oh, the fan fiction.
Yes.
About that.
I love, but can I just say, what a great point, how comedic the relationship between Gabe and Aaron.
Yeah.
It is just a gold mine.
You said
there.
You didn't like sex. It was like being tackled by a skeleton.
Tall skeleton.
Gabe has accomplished so much in his career.
Career-wise and height-wise.
Thank God he's my boss, because I would not have said yes to a first date if I didn't have to.
So, yes, I have been dating Aaron, and it has been, in a word, exquisite. and they're such a terrible fit where they play words with friends against each other,
right?
And to see who picks the movie. And Aaron says, we've watched all these horror movies, and
she wants to watch Wall-E,
right? And I hate it, but I do like the part at the beginning where they have a perfect family and everything.
Yeah,
and then at the end of that episode, Andy says, "Hey, I found this. I thought you might like to borrow it." And Aaron says, "There's a Shrek 2."
Yeah, no. It's just adorable.
Yeah,
it's,
and then Gabe's like trying to slide his DVD in front of
was
that.
Was it like one of the Saws,
right?
Hostel,
yeah.
Or something? I forget which one of those.
There's a dynamic. This comes up in the viewing party episode, which I think is a very important episode for Aaron at Gabe's apartment, right? Where Michael is doing the thing where he's sabotaging everything.
Yes,
right, and he cuts out the cable, and at the end, Aaron finds him outside, and Michael, Aaron says, "Why don't you like him?" And Michael says, "What is there to like? He's just a weird, skeevy little guy with no ways. Why do you care whether I like him or not?" Aaron says, "I care if you like him." And mm-hmm. Michael says, "Why? I'm not your father." Right? Mm-hmm. And there's this sort of unique pause where Aaron does sort of view Michael as her father in a really strange way,
she doesn't have one.
Right. So
the look on her face is, "I know that, but why do you have to say that?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's very much like, "I know, but come on. Like, I need you to act like one."
And Michael, to his credit, picks up and says, "Okay, go to your room." Right. Go to your room, young lady. Yeah.
I thought they had
want to go to my room.
Yeah.
I thought they had a real chance there to just have her go, and just put her hair back over her face. And then be like, "No, not that room."
Yeah. "As long as you were under this roof, you're going to do as I say. I hate your roof. Do not raise your voice to me. I'll raise it how I want. I'll raise
the
roof. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's
really adorable.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
And I don't know. She just sort of continues to be that presence in the office. And then, of course, where it ends after with Gabe, and she gets back with Andy. Although I guess a lot happens throughout that. The relationship after Gabe with Andy is, I think, probably the main reason whenever I talk to any Office fans of why people hate Andy. They just don't like him. And the way he treats Aaron is just awful. And by that time, the audience cares about Aaron so much That's why I think it just makes what Andy does so much worse. Is you're like, how could you do this to Erin? Like, you seem so perfect together, the two of you. And she is perfect with the season 5 Andy, but not with season 9 Andy.
Yeah.
There is sort of a, in the first few seasons between Erin and Andy, there's sort of a stupid love that they have for each other.
Yeah.
Right. There's a scene, it's in season 7, when they talk about politics and when they're talking about who to vote for, and they're like, mm-hmm. obviously both of them are going to do a good job. They got this far, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why can't we just vote for both, right? And they both seem to agree that that's a right yep. opinion to have, right? And what we see in season 9 is a lot of Erin sort of holding Andy up, right? In the Here Comes Trouble episode, mm-hmm. we see Andy really fretting over what's going on at Cornell, and Erin kind of being like, yeah, I think it's kind of pathetic, but. You know, I need to be a good girlfriend. Yeah.
The more I hear about all this acapella drama, the more I think it's kind of pathetic. But when you're with someone, you put up with the stuff that makes you lose respect for them. And that is love.
Yeah. There's...
The whole nine nards.
This follows season 8, where Erin is trying to kind of be independent. She's basically ready to leave Andy because she's so kind of distraught at his relationship with Jessica, which seems to be going very well for the majority of season 8. And then Andy sort of has this big grand romantic gesture to kind of win her back. And it seems as if they're destined to kind of end the show together to kind of see it out. Right.
Really
but then in reality, when you spend more time with them, you see that Andy remains as sort of needy and petty as he's kind of been. And Erin grows a little bit in trying to support him, right? You see at the end of the Angry Andy sort of mm-hmm. episode when he's dealing with Nelly. And then it continues into season 9 mm-hmm. where Andy continues to be kind of ignorant. Yeah.
His obsession with fame is like clearly way more important than his relationship with Erin. He's just like, I don't need attention from you. I need attention from the world. And she's like, well, then what are we doing?
Goodbye.
And as we see Aaron's arc sort of fulfilled, right? How do we see that fulfilled? Number one, with Pete.
Joan.
Right? Oh. Joan Cusack. Joan Cusack. Yes, later. But with Pete, when Erin does break up with Andy, she struggles to break up with him at first, and then she goes to talk to Pete and says, I couldn't do it. And Pete says, oh, well, that's okay. He says, I just want you to be happy, right?
Right, and then she's like,
and
okay, that's
she
it.
She goes back and breaks
it.
Up with Andy. And that's what Pete comes to represent for Erin. And then at the end of the show, in the finale, what she gets as resolution is a meeting with her birth parents, Ed Begley Jr. and Joan Cusack.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a spinoff I would watch.
If you couldn't hear Sean rolling his eyes, just imagine it, because it happened. Yeah.
I just...
Just such a...
Oh, screw you, Sean.
Conclusion.
It's beautiful. I don't want to hear it.
It says nothing to do with her development.
They're all, well,
what are you talking about?
I disagree. She grew up in this foster home. She thinks Phyllis might be her birth mother.
Does everything? Right? Are we to assume that she and Pete are now happily together?
Not that
she needs to wind up with somebody, but just, I mean, it's. It feels like the Andy Erin thing, the writers couldn't figure out how to make it work. It fell apart. And then they were like, we got to do something for Erin, and just had a couple guest appearances. And those are her parents. Easy peasy.
I agree with that one, though, because they do lay the breadcrumbs of they've talked about a birth mother before. That's a mystery that's still hanging
right.
over it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they think. Yeah, there's that episode where Phyllis might be her mom. Phyllis gave away.
And what do we see? We see Erin in that moment just like
the same year
so excited about it and just happy to be a part of a family.
And think about in the Work Bus episode where Nellie is going to submit a letter. She needs a letter to be signed by Andy to apply to adopt the child. And she gets rejected.
Yeah.
And Andy is thinking that he's listening to Nellie cry, but really he's listening to Erin cry. And Nellie is trying to comfort her, being like, it's not your fault, you know, because Erin said, mm-hmm. I know exactly what they want to hear. I know. And she says,
right.
You know, I had a couple of homestays, but I could never get across the line.
Hmm.
And Nellie says, you know, I would have snapped you up. Right. If you were there. I also do kind of like that, you know, putting the sort of orphan foster parent thing aside. I like that Erin's character resolution doesn't involve Andy, you know?
Yeah.
That,
yes.
After everything that's happened, yes.
Yeah, that it doesn't involve her ending up happily ever after with Andy. That it can be something else, that it can be, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
Pete's a pretty good match for her, too.
Yeah.
Pete's a great guy. Plop.
He's always taking dumps.
Didn't you see Pete in L.A.? One of your
yes.
celebrity sightings?
That was my celebrity sighting in L.A. We were at the undefeated shoe shop in Silver Lake.
Oh, yeah. Okay. on Fairfax?
Yeah. And Ryan pointed him out and was like, that's Plop. And I was like, Plop. It does look like him.
That poor guy.
And then like later she's like,
Plop.
we're in LA, like that's him.
Mm-hmm. But I find myself in the moment with Joan Cusack, and part of it is I just love Joan Cusack. I get really touched in that moment, and I think it's this beautiful thing that
good.
Ends with
They're
the three
good.
Of them, and like Aaron deserves that. Absolutely. Like she's
just happened so fast.
Well, of course, but hey, they had to end the show.
I mean, that is the issue that comes up with a lot of these character arcs, that they're resolved within a handful of episodes very, very quickly at the end of season 9.
I was going to say, too, I would watch a show of the home life of Ed Begley, Joan Cusack, and Ellie Kemper. What a great cast.
What if that was a whole episode? What if that was the B story for a whole episode? She is like gotten an address and is going to go find somebody. Like, I mean, you know, if there was more time, maybe. But.
I do love when she's with Irene and is trying to take care of her
yes,
life, you know.
That's true.
The little montage.
Some Gatorade.
Yeah, all the montage of stuff that she does where she's just got all the pills and she's just randomly pouring them into the Sunday through Saturday sort of thing.
Yeah.
She's hitting the top of the TV to try to get the TV to
that
work.
That is such a bizarre little sitcom in its, on its own that's happening. Mm-hmm. Like,
the Office
doesn't
has,
need to be living in
she's
this
not
house.
That smart.
Yeah.
The Office has a handful of really terrible green screen moments. Where when you look back at it, you think, man, that is a green screen for sure. And Aaron standing in front of the house in the bathrobe.
Yes.
Hello, Alonzo. Right?
Yeah.
That's one where you say, oh, man, that's,
they just
you can tell the
get
green
it.
Screen.
Yeah.
There's another one
and
where.
And her first kiss with Andy.
Yeah, in the dump.
In the dump.
There's another one with Michael in New York, I think.
Yes.
Standing on the street and like season 6. But anyway,
Yeah.
That's okay. You know, they're allowed to have a few.
Send us your worst green screen moments from The Office. Want to make a proper list.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I do like her ending, and I think she's just so wonderful, and she's such a beating heart of the show for the last few
there's
seasons.
There's plenty of other endings that I don't like more than that one. But I just, it is one of those characters that I don't think they had her arc fully planned out. Or maybe they did have a plan and things had to change.
That's probably true. I think one of the reasons that I love, you know, digging into The Office so much is it's similar to when I was an English major in college, right?
Yeah.
And you look at books and novels and stuff and you do a lot of analysis and you look at how these sort of plot threads come together and what the resolution is. And the reason I love applying that sort of logic to The Office is because it's so imperfect, right?
Right.
It's a TV show. It's written to be as long as it makes sense and as long as it makes money and people are still watching, right? And they bring in new characters and they do all sorts of different things, right? But inevitably, it is imperfect. They have to finish things when they have to finish things. And Aaron is a perfect example of that, where the character comes in really late. They give her a lot of development later on. There's something that's sort of rushed about her character resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So we can look at it in a way acknowledging that even if we agree with the overall beats, maybe it's too fast. Maybe it's not satisfactory. Maybe it's one thing or the other. But that's one of the reasons I love the show so much.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I don't know. After all this, do you agree with our friend that Aaron is a female Kevin?
No,
I don't think that's a fair assessment.
No,
at all.
Of course not. She
disqualified.
She has way more character development than Kevin does. I mean, I
find her way funnier than Kevin, and I prefer to.
Although I did find this great moment where it's in season 9. I don't have the exact episode written down, but they're about to go see Angela's premature baby, and Oscar says, "I don't know if you guys have ever seen a premature baby before, but like, just be prepared to see this." And Kevin says, "Got that, bimbo?" And Aaron says, "Got it, bimbo." And and Oscar knocks on the door.
Yeah. They have an interesting dynamic. They're buddies
right.
When Michael sets them up on a date, when they go down into the warehouse and are working.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin's like trying to be like, "Guys, when I was younger, my sisters would grease me up and slide me down the hallway." Mm-hmm. And like they're like, "Not now." Like Aaron's like they don't want to hear it. I think it's a great idea.
They don't like it. Yeah. They're also on the Einsteins together.
That's true.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Flying Jib.
She has a number. You just reminded me, Sean, of the like they don't like it. She has a number of moments where she gets really intense. Either she means to or not. And they're always funny. Like thinking when her and Andy are trying to hide the relationship. And she's like, if you do that again, I'll cut your face off. It's like, whoa. Or those sort of moments where she hits on the guy at the bar.
She doesn't know how to play a lot of moments.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a lot of life experience.
I hate big boy. You're like, whoa.
Where did you learn that? In the movies.
I was flirting with a man.
Where did you learn that? In the movies. What kind of movie? Black Snake Moan?
I do. That's the other part about Erin that I love so much, that she like that she's almost kind of like a badly programmed, like, you know, like she's just constantly she doesn't know how to act in certain situations. When she's talking to Robert California's son, Birdie Boy, would you like to play this game?
Yeah, that I love that. She has a lot of confidence and not a lot of competence, so which is a great combination for her, because she's just like,
if you smile and nod and
another moment like that in the Niagara episode. When Andy is dancing, and they're like, all right, Andy.
What else you got?
Right, and then Andy drops to the floor and tears his scrotum on his car keys, and then everyone is freaking out. Erin says, what else you got? And then later, when they're sitting in the pew, and Erin offers him, like, this wrap or this shawl that she has, and she says, I thought the wood might be too hard on your damaged penis.
It's like, thank you. Yes.
As one sort of last thing, I do love that Erin sort of becomes protective of Michael when Michael starts dating Holly.
Yes.
When Holly comes in
We have to admit.
Erin says, I'm sorry, I'm waiting for my boss's pretty friend. Oh, you're Holly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I
don't get it.
Yeah. In the search, when they go to look for Michael, right, they bring three people. Holly, right, Dwight, and the receptionist, right? It is Erin, of course, but she's filling in the role of receptionist, which is Pam/Erin. And Erin says, Holly is ruining Michael's life. He thinks she is so special, and she's so not. Her personality is like a 3. Her sense of humor is a 2. Her ears are like a 7 and a 4. Add it all up, and what do you get? 16. And he treats her like she's a perfect 40. It's nuts.
Perfect 40.
There's the part where Holly and Michael are... right before Holly and Michael are having this whole discussion about Todd Packer the sales staff, Erin is like, oh, are you heading back to the annex? Like, I have Dwight's ant farm.
Ant farm.
She like...
I think they're starting to eat each other.
That's right. She's like, for God's sakes, it just needs to be
done. And you can feel her off camera just like, they need to start farming.
Yeah, she just thinks Holly's so dumb.
And like,
that's so good.
The moment Erin was cemented of like, I love this character, is just, it's the very small moment when her and Michael are dancing on, they're like, he's like, a bossa nova. How about a bossa nova?
She
does. The look on her face.
She does a little finger wave, and they're both like, and it's so cute. It's just like, it's the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like, I'm in on this. And the chemistry in her and Michael's perfect. And she's like, so.
When he sprays her with the champagne. That is the most outrageous.
That one makes the credits.
That commitment.
And the bobbing for apples makes the credits. Two
ate 2 apples.
Yeah. It's so funny.
Yes. I mean, she really is, for how dumb she really is extraordinary.
Yeah. And 2 apples underwater in that time, and they think she's dead. Her limp body is just draped over the pool.
Or in the Gettysburg episode when Dwight is telling her about the Battle of Shrewd Farms, and Oscar says, all right, okay, Gore Vidal, what are you telling this poor girl?
Anything else on Erin?
I'm sorry, Pat, but I love Erin. And Pat, why don't you call in with your argument, maybe, and we can break it down a little bit further.
I just have some quotes written down. Here's one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What? According to the internet, the tallest man in the world is Chinese. So much for keeping our secrets up high. What's America going to do? I know what we're going to do. We're going to put our best minds on it.
Yep.
Oh, how about this one? When Aaron,
that's the name of this segment, by the way. Oh, how about this
one? Yeah, when we get like 30 or 40 minutes in, I'm just reading notes that I got that I'd want to make sure we don't miss. And we'll miss stuff anyway, but how... So when... oh, this should be part of the trivia. But in the delivery, you when they're trying to prevent... I don't know if you guys, how many of these you guys would get. But they're trying to keep Pam distracted so she doesn't have her baby, and Aaron is just naming racehorses.
Yes.
Affirm, oh, yeah. Seattle Slough, Secretariat, Citation, Assault, Count Fleet, Whirlaway, War Admiral, Omaha, Gallant Fox, and I know this, the Johnny was Johnny Loftus. Sired by Starshoot.
that's like, yeah, she has all this weird knowledge. She's when after she's dating Andy for a little while, she develops like all this sailing knowledge. She like tries to learn about sailing and stuff like that. So, I mean, she is smart.
Andy, dummy. Didn't take her.
Friggin' Andy.
The worst.
I love.
But Aaron's the best.
I love when Andy says to Pam, what do you think of Aaron? I mean, she's kind of cool. And Pam says, And Andy says, you think I can do better? And Pam goes,
Echoing the moment. Echoing the moment. When he goes up to reception to talk to Pam, splits his legs really wide.
Yeah, yeah.
And is like asking her about Angela. And she's like, well, Pamela, she's kind of intense. Dog. And she's like, when I punched a hole through a wall. And she's like, that's right, you did. And it dawns on Pam that him and Angela are a great match. And like, she's really religious, and he's like, I come from a line of wasps so far, it goes back to the Mayflower or something. I don't know what it is. But it's like, this is great. But yeah, no, that's Aaron, I love Aaron. Aaron Hannon. Mm-hmm.
Legend.
Straight up.
All right.
What's next, guys? You want to do
conference room?
Let's do it.
Okay, everybody, listen up. If you are not in that conference room in 2 minutes, I am going to kill you.
All right, folks, we just a few little things here. We got rattled around in the hopper here for the conference room. First, I want to share with you, this is from Gabe on Facebook. Hey, guys, I've been bouncing around listening to different episodes last month, given some thought on recasting characters. He didn't do them all, but here's a few of the good ones that I liked. As always, the disclaimer with these is assume they are the age they need to be to adjust the office. As Michael Scott, Dana Carvey, great choice.
That's a good one.
Love it. Jim Halpert, Seth Meyers.
Hmm. Oh, that's
a young
nice.
Seth Meyers,
yeah,
I think, really would have worked. He's got the charm. He's got the delivery.
Yeah. He'd
got
have
the
that
look.
Big smile and be like, I don't care.
He'd be so good at looks to the camera.
Yeah.
He'd be fantastic. But on to bigger and better things, he'd went.
Mm-hmm.
Maggie Lawson is Pam Beasley. Hmm. She plays the detective on Psych, that show.
Okay.
Oh. And you'd recognize her.
Yes.
But much in the
with Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub. Lest we forget.
Shout out to Marvelous Maisel season 3. Oh boy. I binged 3 episodes last night. It was great.
Oh, good for
I
you.
Can't wait.
When in doubt, just know that Tony Shalhoub, wherever he goes.
All
right. I forgot about Dwight Schrute, Zach Galifianakis. Of course.
Okay.
That would have been interesting for his career, like what would have happened there, but
I could see that.
A bearded intent like I don't know, it'd be different Dwight.
Zach Galifianakis in his stand-up flips between apathetic and so over-the-top committed and intense. I can see it being a very good intense.
Mm-hmm. The committed
intense. It's not funny!
Yeah,
Michael!
Yeah, totally. I love this one. He gave 2 for Toby. Ray Romano, which I think one of us had done Ray Romano. I think
I don't know if I did that. Nuh-uh.
Maybe not I me. Did. I don't know.
That's
his
one.
Other one, though, Mike Birbiglia. Great choice.
I love Mike Birbiglia.
Yeah.
He probably would have been involved a little more than Toby was, but you know, part of Toby is that he's so realistic.
Hmm.
Dax Shepard is Andy Bernard. Got no problems with that.
That could be good.
Yeah.
Probably would have become a little... He would probably would have stayed broier.
Yeah.
He probably would have continued being broier.
Yeah.
Which I think initially seemed like what they wanted with Andy.
Kristen Bell would have been a really good Pam.
Oh yeah, that's a great
Dax
call.
Dax Shepard's wife. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anna Faris is Aaron Hannon.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Pretty good one. She'd be great too. And then I didn't recognize these names. Paulo Costanzo is Ryan Howard.
I don't know.
Kurt Fuller is Creed.
Paulo
Google these names, you'll go, "Oh, that guy." Kurt Fuller is like, I looked him up and I was like, oh, okay, sure.
In the trailer, we have no Wi-Fi. I feel bad that I can't look
it up. I know. That's how it goes. And Margot Martindale as Phyllis. Mm. I don't know who that is either. Anyway, thank you so much, Gabe. We always love seeing the recastings. And I'm keeping a spreadsheet of everyone who's like, you know, giving us names. And I think at the end of this, we'll probably have a strong cast.
Yeah, really? Paulo Costanzo's from Royal Pains. This guy, he watches some USA TV shows.
This guy watches USA. Nice.
Margot Martindale would be a great
Monk.
Phyllis.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'd be great. She plays, Nick's mom in New Girl, I think.
I've never seen New Girl.
Okay.
Never seen
it. Oh, you should watch
it. Look up Kurt Fuller, too, while we're going.
This is great content when you name an actor or an actress, and we're like, I can't think of who that is.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Google machine. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Really good audio.
Okay.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, next one. This is from Danielle in Virginia. And just bear with me on this one. I got to read a little bit to you, but she sent us this fan theory that I was very impressed by. She sent a long email. A lot of research thought went into this. Again, from Danielle, I don't think you have done an analysis of the deal with Astrid, but I've always wondered what's going on with her. Since no one I know in real life cares this much, I'm sending you my thoughts. That's why we're here. Thank you. It's really long, but there's a lot of this. I've been wondering about this for years. I'm assuming, for all the below, that the episode air dates coincide with the dates in the Office universe. So assuming it's happening in real time.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we can assume that.
Yeah.
Also assuming and basing her date calculations on the typical 38 weeks from conception to due date.
That's a fair assumption because whenever they come back, season premiere, it's always like, what did you do this summer?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's Christmas when it's a Christmas episode.
That is true.
Yeah.
So the obvious, she says, Jan was almost certainly pregnant at the dinner party.
Mm.
Even if she were to get pregnant that day, April 10th, 2008, the baby would have been due around January 1st, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
If the shower occurs on October 16th, this would have been about 11 weeks before the due date. I believe it's very unlikely that a baby born that prematurely would be out of the hospital, let alone coming to a party and appearing perfectly healthy and normal size. Talking about the baby shower. So I think she must have been conceived well before the dinner party. Moreover, Jan almost certainly knew that she was pregnant at the dinner party. Hmm. If Astrid were in fact conceived with a sperm donor, a process that's typically invasive and expensive, it stands to reason that Jan would want to be able to take a pregnancy test ASAP to see if it worked. This is all, I did not know this. This is good stuff.
Okay. You cheated on me when I specifically asked you not to?
If this is the case, it seems that she's about 17 weeks pregnant at the dinner party. So what was she planning to do about Michael? It seems if she had the plan to stay with Michael, let him think of the baby was his, she would have loved to know. She would have let him know about the pregnancy weeks before. Her behavior at the dinner party suggests she does want to stay with Michael. Acting jealous at Pam's supposed history, crying when she thinks he's arrested, repairing the broken Dundee. And if she didn't want to stay with him, then would have been that great a bomb to drop on him during their screaming match. Hits her with a zero salary and having never sold a candle, and she replies, well, guess what? I'm pregnant and it's not yours.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been awesome.
Oh. Jeez.
She goes on. There's a lot more here. She goes into sort of with Michael's vasectomy. Why was she allowing all that to happen? Yada, yada. Snip, snap, snip, snap. Why, even if it's a lie, which almost certainly is, since she knows she was pregnant, what purpose is this in serving a larger plan? In short, I think that as of the dinner party, Jan was 17-ish weeks pregnant and had no intention of leaving Michael, but I can't understand her motivation. What was her end game?
Wow. I mean, that'd be certainly interesting. Is she drinking wine that whole night? Because I'm pretty sure she is.
You betcha. You betcha.
I mean, that'd be the only thing that would be like, it wouldn't make too much sense if she was paying for this.
Yes.
And knew.
Ultimately, this comes down
that
to.
That she'd be getting wasted like this.
Right.
But she is, I mean, you know.
Jan is drinking wine during this time. I'm just thinking now, think about the Money episode.
Yeah.
When Jan pulls up in the Porsche and says, you drive, I had too much wine.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, she's wearing that jumpsuit. Oh, the lighting is so harsh.
If we're going to assume that Jan was 17 weeks pregnant at that time, she certainly was drinking wine.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
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 There is a lot of looks of contempt in the office, glances, but the one she looks at the camera as she walks around the car in Money. Is the number one, I think, just disdain of like, oh my God, the cameras are here.
Yeah.
It's hard to know what her plan is. I mean, she took this home and made it a house.
I think, you know, obviously you could chalk this up to, well, you just can't, all these things when you're writing future episodes, oh, what if Jan's pregnant now? You can't go back and rewrite all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to just shout out Danielle because this is an incredibly researched and well thought out
fan theory. Thank you, Danielle.
I think the point of this is I don't think Jan has any idea what her plan is, and I think that's manifest in how she acts in the show. Where she, in Cocktail, she's like, well, like, you know, I've talked to my therapist about this. Like, I can either, you know, she gives the pros and cons, the pros being have a family, the happy life, fall madly in love, yada, yada, or I date Michael Scott publicly and collapse like a dying star.
Yeah.
Which is what happens.
Stability, children.
Yes. Yeah. which is a great little, and she's having a cigarette.
Do you have a light?
Yeah. Yes, I don't think Jan has any plan. I think she could have absolutely... She obviously doesn't care about hurting Michael at all. She has no regard for how he really cares, which is why when she's, you know, fixing the Dundee at the end, it's one of the most... That's as tender as she ever gets with Michael, really.
Well, they're sitting on the train at the end of Money, and she says, you were there for me, and I'm going to stand by you, and that's how this works.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah.
Would have been a time to say, I'm pregnant.
So where is this train going? I think the engineer left.
All right, time for some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
All right, I prepared trivia this week. This is all Aaron-themed trivia. Some of these we covered extensively in our discussion. Let's start with the easiest one. What is Aaron's middle name?
Aaron.
Who wants to guess when the baby will be born? okay, during the search committee episode in season 7, when Dwight is trying to promise Jim when Dwight is trying to convince Jim to make him manager, he promises that Aaron will do what for his entertainment?
I don't know.
I know this scene. I'm like, Aaron will
blank for your entertainment.
Dance?
No, it's something like injuring herself. Or what is it?
Eat garbage.
Eat garbage, that's right.
What is the name of the sexual card game that Aaron brings up at Halloween?
Oh, gosh. It's the cards that get you hard.
Pecker poker.
Pecker
the
poker.
Game of cards that makes you hard. Okay.
That makes you hard.
during the trivia episode, the first question is, Ray Charles famously had this state on his mind. What is its capital? And Aaron lists, or Kevin says, ooh, what do blind people think about? And Aaron says, what, 7 things.
Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't remember this at all.
nighttime.
I don't remember this
it
at all.
It is dogs, canes, signs, manholes, stairs, piano, darkness.
Manholes.
Dogs, canes.
I haven't watched trivia like
she goes so fast with that.
How does Aaron make tea for Irene?
Boiling Gatorade.
Yes. What is Aaron's password for video chatting?
I don't know.
Aaron 123.
Okay.
And Irene says that's a terrible password.
Yeah, right.
And then what is Irene saying to Andy? Say to Andy when he shows up to get Aaron.
You got it's like you got a ring.
Where's the ring,
Where's
Lancelot?
The ring, Lancelot? Yeah.
Where's the ring, Lancelot?
With that ass and those bazongas.
Yeah.
When they're driving back in Get the Girl, when Andy says to Aaron, or he has to go back and break up with Jessica officially and say that he likes Aaron. Aaron does not want to kiss him because she feels tired. Why does Aaron feel tired?
Oh, boy. Again, a stretch I have not watched in a long time.
Well, she doesn't. Well, he's still dating Jessica.
Here, I'll just give this. I didn't set it up very well.
Yeah.
So Aaron says, yes, of course. I feel really tired. Andy says, yeah. Aaron says, probably from seeing that turkey. Oh, yeah. When we drove by that farm, always does it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no. I totally missed that.
Okay. When Dwight is manager and he has codes, secret codes to enter the office, what is the code? Dwight cannot get it right, and he gets hit with the steam.
Right. It's like peppermint? No. Mm-mm. I started watching this and stopped right before
this. The prompt is the tea in Nepal is very hot.
That's right. But the...
I don't know what it is.
Coffee and brew is much hotter.
Yeah, you got it. Okay. Wow. Yeah, nice. Very, very well done. That's all I had for Aaron-themed trivia.
Ooh. But,
yeah.
Nice work.
I had to stop thinking and just say it. It was like, it's in there. You start talking, it'll come out.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. Please write us your questions and your comments. You can call us 503-694-9314. You can leave us a voicemail and we play them on the show. You can email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter, @MichaelScottPod. And we have a website, MichaelScottPod.com. Very special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and designs all our artwork, and Open Signal, a community media center in Portland where we record our show in an Airstream trailer in the parking lot.
Please remember to rate and review the show. It helps us. It helps people find the show.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, guys.
And seriously, all of the interaction that we've had has been really amazing.
People send us so much stuff now. It's so cool. So, you know, we really appreciate you guys sending in questions and comments. Mm-hmm. We are going to try and get to everything if we can. So we're going to keep doing mailbag segments. We're going to do full mailbag episodes.
We got, what do we have coming up? We're doing Christmas, obviously.
Yeah, please write to us about Christmas episodes because we're going to be doing doing holiday specials pretty soon here.
Christmas is on a Wednesday this year, so stay tuned for that holiday drop.
Yeah, we're gonna drop it on Christmas Day.
I know, I'm planning on Mike, but we could do two Christmas episodes and split all the Christmas episodes up.
Whoa.
And do a part one and part two. I don't know.
Let's do it.
Something crazy.
But please, if you got anything to say about those episodes, now's the time to write us about it, and we'll talk about it.
One is for impish, and one is for admirable.
Next episode is going to be impish or admirable.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Pippity poppity, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.